Thank you. I would like to start by acknowledging my co-author, Asmrit Berhe, who couldn't be here. So I'm going to talk about models. I don't have experimental results to show you today. And except these are not mine, these are some general data that talk about erosion, soil movement, and carbon movement. So it's estimated that about 1 billion hectares of land globally is impacted by wind and water erosion. That accounts for about 13% of the global land mass. And that mobilizes about 75 gigatons of soil annually, which is roughly translated to 1 to 5 gigatons of carbon. And this is the amount of soil that is redistributed inland, soil that doesn't end up into the oceans. And there have been a few studies that have shown and suggested that a portion of this redistributed carbon could potentially form sink for atmospheric carbon. So this is a big message, and my talk is going to focus on how this can be modeled. So 0.1 to 1.5 gigatons of carbon annually might be permanently or semi-permanently sequestered because of soil movement and redistribution by erosion. Okay, so, and I cite these key papers that show these evidence for these in a few localized locations. And the goal of my presentation is to come up with a generalized, simple model that might explain these things. Okay, so my objective is to propose, develop a conceptual and a mathematical model that constrains the requirement for how a watershed may act as a sink for atmospheric CO2. So I'm going to show you some idealized watershed calculations. And the setting is divided into three times. So there is the time less than zero, some steady state condition before some big disturbance happens. And then there is time zero, where I consider a one-time big erosion event happens. And then there is time greater than zero when time progresses until we reach a new equilibrium. And the questions that I ask, actually, I'm going to address only one question today, is how does the carbon storage dynamics evolve until a new equilibrium is created? And eventually, once we get into a new equilibrium, what conditions dictate whether we have a sink or a source? Model, the basic model that I'm going to base my discussions on is this single pool carbon dynamics model. It essentially describes the change in carbon content in a given soil, in this case in a given watershed, as a balance between the inputs in the form of net primary productivity, for example, and the decay, and the decay in this case some long-term slow erosion or decomposition. So C is the carbon content at any given time, and K is that decay constant that average collects every process that consumes carbon. The unit for this equation is carbon is in kilograms per meter squared, so there is an implied depth. So kilograms of carbon per meter squared. I is kilograms of net carbon input. Actually gross carbon input in kilograms per meter squared per year, and K is a rate constant that has a unit of 1 over year. So this is my model, my conceptualization of how the process looks like. On the x-axis I have area, and on the y-axis I have carbon stock, and this is the watershed when time is before zero, right? So area times carbon stock gives you the total mass of carbon in this entire watershed, right? And at some time, at some point, a portion of the area, represented here by the width here, is subjected to erosion, and carbon is mobilized and transported and gets deposited from here, from this yellow area to this practice with C. So now I divided my soil pool for time equals zero into three different pools. The soil that remains in the eroded area, A, the soil that has been moved from the eroded area and deposited on the depositional site, C, and the buried old carbon in the depositional setting. And what I'm going to do in the next few slides is to apply that single pool model for these three different pools and see where this takes us. Okay? Just to make an initial comment, though, to simplify what I do here, what I'm going to assume is a pre-erosion case, if at time zero and before time zero, I'm going to assume that the system was under steady state, which means VCDT was zero. In general, the system has reached an equilibrium, and because it was an equilibrium condition, there is no net gain or loss of carbon over a long period of time. So this is a stable system that has not been disturbed yet. And when you simplify that equation, what you get is you can actually calculate your carbon stock is simply the ratio of your input and the decay constant. Right? So the input is balanced by the decay, and it gives you that constant, stable carbon content. And the perturbation now happens and changes these. Right? Another note that I want to make here is that the watershed is divided into two areas, the erosional and depositional areas, AE and AD. The sum of those two gives you the total area. And I'm considering only one-time erosion, right? And at that one-time erosion, it creates a loss of carbon in the erosional area, which I denote here by delta C. And the total mass of carbon lost is simply the area of the erosion multiplied by the change that gives you mass. Right? So I don't want to deal with real numbers because I'm trying to get at what are the conditions that make this sink or soar. So I can simplify this by making it dimensionless, which means I scale everything by the initial condition. So I have equations that have no dimensions. If you can't follow this in this short time, don't worry, I'll explain the real thing later on. So this is the model in dimensionless quantities, and this is the area in dimensionless quantities. This is the ratio of the eroded area divided by the total area. This is the ratio of the depositional area divided by the total area, or 1 over AE. But the key thing is, what happens is, once you divide all this up, what you get is, now this erosional area, the buried area, and the deposited pool, all these three will have different initial carbon contents because I have perturbed the system. So the initial carbon content of the erosional pool is given here by 1 minus the removed carbon, right? And the buried pool, it's just buried, nothing happened to it, so I have 1, I have the original amount of carbon. And in the deposited pool, I have carbon, the same carbon, but it's redistributed over different area. So I weigh that by the area. So it's the same carbon. The carbon has not left the watershed. It is still within that closed watershed. So now that I have these different initial conditions, what will happen as time progresses? Right? So two things will change. Because of erosion, the rate of input might change, the rate of decay might change, and you could have many, many different combinations of scenarios that you can consider. Right? So for a couple of hypothetical cases, this is what you would expect over time. So here, black is the buried carbon that started high and then goes down. There is no input to the buried carbon because it's below ground. There might be slight input from transport of dissolved organic carbon. The green one is the deposited carbon, the carbon that is moved from the erosional site to the depositional site. It starts slow. For the example cases, it might increase over time and reach equilibrium. And the red is the eroded part. The eroded part lost carbon. It probably also lost some productivity, but also gained some new potential for productivity. Anyway, it changed slightly, and the sum of those gives you the total carbon content. And if at the end you end up having higher amount of carbon than you started with, then you have a sink, like in this example. If this curve goes down below 1, it means you have a source. Over the long period of time, that erosion, that single erosion event, creates a source or sink. Okay. So for the sake of time, I'm going to skip this dynamics, the aerodynamic component of the modeling. I'm going to focus only on the final steady state, the second steady state. And what I'm going to show you is what happens after a long time and what conditions cause source or sink. So the change over that long period of time that I showed you here, the change that happens in the erosional area is simply given by the final ratio of I over K minus the initial starting point. So all these gray ones are the new input and the new K in these different sites, right? And this is the starting initial conditions for these three different pools. And you take the sum and then you simplify it, you get some equation that doesn't look pretty, but it's actually fairly simple. And this essentially tells us whether we have a sink or a source. So I'm going to give you just two examples and I'll stop. My first example is going to be if I assume the buried carbon pool is fully preserved. In other words, if there is no net change, no net addition or reduction of carbon in the buried pool. So if I set that to 1 and I simplify my equation, I get this, and then here is the result. Okay? So instead of describing the equations, I'll describe the results because it's much easier to understand here. What you have here is the ratio of I over K, the input over decay in the eroded site, versus the I over K in the deposited site. These dotted lines represent 1, which means the same as before the deposition. Okay? So in this case, if the buried carbon is preserved completely, then your chances of having sink is very high, right? Even if your eroded site has less than 1 I over K, which means even if the eroded site has less than 1 productivity, because you are gaining additional productivity in the deposited pool, the chances of having a sink is very, very high. Right? And the chances of having a sink also increases as the area of erosion gets smaller. So area of erosion, point 1, is shown here by black line, which shows that in almost all cases, if the eroded site is smaller and that soil is distributed over a larger area, your chances of having a sink, which is covered by all these parameter space, is very, very high. The only time that it becomes difficult to have a sink is if the eroded area is bigger and the depositional site is smaller. The second case is similar to that, except that I will assume the I over K for the buried pool is somewhere between 0 and 1, which means there is some loss of carbon in the buried pool. The equation is similar to that, slightly different, and I get a curve that looks like that. Okay? Here again, the Y and the X are the same, the dotted line is the same. This dotted line means that the pool has higher storage potential. If it's greater than 1, if it's less than 1, it means it has lower storage potential. But in any case, what you see is similar to what we saw before. If you have shorter, if you have smaller erosional area, your chances of having very high storage potential and sink is high. Okay? So let me skip to my conclusion. I have several scenarios that can go on, but what eventually you get out of all these types of models is that if deposition occurs on site, if most of the soil that is eroded remains in the watershed, and if the buried carbon is partially preserved, it doesn't have to be fully preserved, if it's partially preserved, then the likelihood of having a watershed acting as a carbon sink for atmospheric carbon dioxide is very high. And the implication for that is then we have some management options that we can follow in order to maximize this potential. Avoiding erosion would be good, but if we can't avoid erosion, there are some post-erosion management practices that we can do in order to maximize at least the silver lining of this unwanted process.
Okay. Thank you very much.
My time.
Yeah.